Welcome to It's a Good Good Podcast. My name is Hayden.
I'm Chris.
I'm Harry.
And yeah, we're just a bunch of guys having talks about theology, the Bible, and God. And basically our whole goal is just to be accessible to anyone, that you don't need a theology seminary degree.
Right.
To be able to talk about God. We definitely want to make it easy and simple.
I definitely don't have any of those degrees.
Yeah. That's so true though. I mean, you just have to be interested in it. Mm-hmm. All the information's out there.
All right, what is up? It is the social distancing version of It's a Good Good Podcast. Mm-hmm. We are here on a Zoom call, which, by the way, I saw that Zoom stock went up 160%.
What?
Yeah, which is nuts. So if Absolutely. You had foresight to invest in Zoom, you're now a millionaire. Mm-hmm. Good work. Yeah, so there's obviously a lot of downsides to coronavirus, but there are upsides as well, like virtual backgrounds on Zoom.
But,
you could do a really good like Easter Sunday sermon with you rising.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that. Yeah, have the background be like, you know, a grave or whatever.
Third day.
Heroes. Anyway. But yeah, so we've kind of been neglecting to meet for a couple weeks because of this. And I think part of that's like good and fine. One thing that I think has been good for me, at least with the coronavirus, is that it has kicked the routine just like completely. Like there is no, your normal routine from earlier no longer exists, most likely. And I think that's actually a really good thing. It gives you a time to like reevaluate your routine and everything like that. So I think part of that's been good, but obviously like I miss having conversations with you guys. And so, yeah, we wanted to get back on that. And so we figured we'd kind of take a pause from our regular scheduling and talk about the coronavirus and what does it have to do with the Bible? Does it have anything to do with the Bible? What would Jesus say about it? Things like that. So yeah, that's where we're going to go this week.
Yeah, I think it's important to, as I'm trying to think about it, think about the coronavirus and things similar to it in a Christian light, which is not to say that it is a good thing, but to take suffering and find good in it. Like you're just saying, like, we're not saying it's great that like people are dying, but with the situation that's going on, it's great that like maybe my routine's turned on its head and I'm spending more time with my family, or I'm spending more time like walking outside, which is something like I haven't done, you know, ever really in my life on a regular basis. So how can we take something that is probably on the whole, from our perspective, a really negative thing and like find some good in it?
Yeah, I think that's important. Like just because there's a lot of terrible things happening right now and people are dying. And obviously like the pandemic by itself is not a good thing. But just because there are bad things happening doesn't mean there's also not still good things happening, and there's not still a lot of good coming out of it. And I agree. I think the change up in routine can be really good. I'm the type of person that actually gets excited about that. Not that like I'm excited about any of this happening, but I'm glad things change because it forces me to also change and to grow. Mm-hmm. But I know it's hard to put my perspective and push that on other people, because I also have a lot of family that are in the medical field that are still working in hospitals. And now their job is more dangerous than ever. And being a part of that, like going to work at a hospital and coming home, like you're also endangering not only yourself, but you're like forced to endanger the people you love. So,
yeah. Yeah, so I mean, you guys kind of brought up the big question that I think lies behind this in a lot of people's minds, which is, okay, so the immediate fruits of the coronavirus are like a pretty intense amount of suffering. There, that kind of comes on a couple different angles. The one angle is just the obvious one. Like people are dying, like, and dying in pretty excessive numbers. Like, I think this week has been the deadliest week in the U.S. for the coronavirus, and we've seen deaths go up quite a bit. But all around the world too, like, people are just, they're dying from the coronavirus at a large amount. And then you have the other side of things where, because people are socially isolating and not getting out, there's an economic slowdown. A lot of people are losing their jobs just because, whatever, you know, they work at a restaurant or whatever, and now they, nobody can come to their restaurant, so they don't get paid. So there are, yeah, there's that. There's the actual physical suffering side of it. And then there's like the economic stability suffering side. And then you have, I can't see my friends. So now you've got like emotional suffering. And then it's like, well, I also can't go to church. So for people who, like, that's a big part of their way of like worship. And if they go to church, like, now you got spiritual suffering on this side too. So like literally a holistic thing that like this pandemic is causing suffering on every level to a lot of people. So yeah, I think the question is like, why would God let that happen?
Yeah, the problem of pain and suffering. Let us answer that on today's
podcast. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to like wrap up the podcast and like quickly here, but I don't think the Bible has really any answers for this. I think looking at the Bible, we see a history of God's people that have gone through a whole lot of suffering, plagues, wars, being nomadic, not having a home. And I think when we look at the Bible in that way and we try to learn from that, I think what we see is that our God is a God of people that suffer. And anytime you see these crazy stories of suffering, it always points back to people growing in the relationship with Christ and God using those people. So I think there can be a really encouraging component of that for sure. Because when we see God close to people, it's usually in times of suffering. And I honestly think that's probably more on us than on anything, is because when we suffer, we tend to push ourselves and drive ourselves closer to God. And I think when we look at the Bible, we see a lot of that.
Yeah. I think there's easy ways to think of examples like that. Like Hayden's saying, like I personally, I'm not an introvert. So like, I like having my alone time, but for the most part, I like to at least have the option to go see people. Yeah. Like this time, like with that social suffering, it like makes me cherish the relationships that I do have. Like us three, we hopped on a Zoom like the other day, and it's like, we never would have done that. We're never gonna like, right. Oh yeah, it's like hop on a Zoom and chat, but we did it because it's like, man, I cherish my friendship.
Absolutely.
And like, that's an easy observation, but then it's like, when you think about suffering and dying, it's like, that's why, like, we have no answer to the problem of pain. We have no answer as to like really why those things happen, especially in the moment. Maybe down the road, maybe with like a lifetime of knowledge of what happens after that, but certainly in the moment, it's really, really difficult, if not impossible, for us to like, yeah.
So I think, you know, like the question behind the question then is, okay, if God is all powerful, which the Bible would say, and if he has control over all things, he would have known that this coronavirus was going to cause a lot of suffering. So if he's a good God, like, why would he allow that? And I think part of what you said is, well, out of the suffering, we see people draw closer to God and good come out of that. But yeah, I think it asks the question, like, is God in control? And maybe that's kind of a question to ask, like, where do we see God? Is he in control in these moments, or like, is he not?
Well, I think that's another question we can't really answer, but like, I probably fall in like a little bit more of a, like, that's one of my hugest struggles, because like, totally. this like global situation where it's like affecting everybody, that like makes you ask the question. But then like on an individual level, if you see somebody die from cancer, if you see someone like get run over by a car, like if you see like all these terrible things happen on like a very, very small scale, you still ask yourself that same question. It's only like when a pandemic hits or when like a tornado comes through Tennessee and like destroys it and nobody knows, are you like, man, like it feels like either God is in control and he's a jerk, or he's really not in control and like these things are just happening and he has no control over it. It makes me think of like the book of Job, you know, because like it's the kind of the same thing where like that would tell us that it's not because we're screwing up that we're getting punished, you know, but it doesn't necessarily tell you the answer as to why bad things happen, period.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing to talk about, for sure. And I think, like we joked about earlier, we're not going to be able to answer this in one sitting because people have been debating about it for a really long time. Yeah, so I think looking at the Bible, we do know that God is all-powerful. My Samsung's talking to me.
You mentioned all-powerful. Here I am, Chris. What can I help you with?
Nice of you. So God is all-powerful, and we do see in the Bible that he has, and sometimes gone and changed things and prevented things from happening and also started things in our world in the way that we see things. And sometimes he doesn't. You know, that's super hard. I think the hard truth is that God doesn't promise to protect us from all this evil in the world. Figuring out what the source of all that is another whole question. Mm-hmm. But God doesn't promise that our life is going to be easier, that we're not going to have to endure suffering. Actually, when you look at the Bible, it's pretty much the opposite. All people that follow God endure suffering.
I think there's two sides of it too. There is the source, which we could debate forever about, like, do those things come from God? Do they not come from God, and why? And then there's also like, when I think about sickness in general, I think about like Jesus healing tons of sick people. So it's like, there's the source of it. And then there's also like the relief of it. And we want to hold God accountable for both of those things. I realize that I do. It's like, number one, I want it not to happen. And then number two, when it does happen, I want it to be taken away. And it's, I don't know if that's the correct perspective to have when it comes to suffering. And I think where we started, where it's like, this happened, where can we find good in it? You know, I think that might be a little bit more Christian way to look at the problem of pain and suffering.
Yeah. So I think you, Harry, mentioned the book of Job, which I think does kind of talk through a story about suffering and where it comes from and what the response should be. So maybe do we want to just take a quick dip into the book of Job and ask, does this book have anything to do with the coronavirus? And maybe the question's like, or the answer's like, nope, and we like keep going. But
yeah, I think we could dip a toe into the 50 chapters that is a philosophical diatribe that is the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast. I think we probably have, but I typically say that I hate the book of Job.
I'm glad you used that word, because like I thought you were gonna be like, I feel like, you know, Chris has told me personally that he doesn't want the book of Job to be in the Bible.
No, yeah, I'm okay with the fact that it's there, right? It's there. I can't do anything about it. It's in the Bible. But I don't like that it's there. I think the theology of Job seems to contradict other parts of the Bible. But that's only if you take, if you truly believe that everything in Job is literal truth. And I think that is a really hard thing to discuss. It kind of really depends on your theology of the Bible in general. Is it all 100% true events happening, or does the truth in the Bible just necessarily mean that that the things we pull out of it are true? So the philosophies of life and those things,
right?
And that's a huge rabbit trail, and I'll say that it's very dangerous. You can get to a point where there are some people that are just like, the Bible is just some good advice, but none of it happened. That's not at all what I believe. But when I look at Job and I see God and the devil kind of making wagers over a man's life, I don't like that. I think it's an interesting book, but I don't think that story happened.
Yeah, well, and you just kind of said it too. Like, I told Hayden this like a couple weeks ago when we were like, you know, just like wading deep through Genesis. It's like people would say don't take the Bible fully literally, but then when we read the Bible and then we take what we've learned from the Bible and apply it to our God that we believe in today, it's like, mm-hmm. isn't that taking it literally in some sort of way? And so like Job, like I would tend to agree. It's like, that is an interesting philosophical argument, but then again, it's really difficult to take that book and like the learnings from it and then apply it to like the question that we're asking right now. Like, why would God do something like the coronavirus? It's problematic, to say the least.
Yeah. So I think a couple thoughts just going on with that is I think that, you know, where I would agree, I don't necessarily think that Job is a story of like a biography or like an autobiography of a man named Job who actually lived and experienced all that. I think a more compelling argument for what it's doing in the Bible would be taken from the guys that we love so dearly at the Bible Project, who would say it's a dialogue. It's part of a collection of wisdom literature, and talking alongside Proverbs and Ecclesiastes specifically and other wisdom literature in the Bible. But I think those two most notably, because Proverbs basically takes the line of, if you are a good person, if you follow the laws, then good things are going to happen to you. If something bad happened to you, it's because you did something wrong, or maybe your parents did something wrong. And that's kind of the general logic of Proverbs. And so I think that like that does have, if we were to follow that logic, we would say, oh, well, then the coronavirus must be because we've done something wrong. But then we turn to Ecclesiastes, and Ecclesiastes is essentially like, honestly, things just don't matter. Something might happen, but it wasn't necessarily caused by God. It's really just like life is fleeting. So
meaningless.
Yeah, exactly. Life is super fleeting. Nothing really matters. We think of things in like a grand cosmic sphere, but in reality, our life is just like a blip on the map. So like a little bit of suffering might seem like a lot to you, but honestly, it's like, it wasn't because you did anything. It was just because life is weird.
You know, that's kind of like the end of Job as well.
Yeah,
where Job ends up is basically God saying, like, look at the expanse of everything ever created, and like put your life in perspective of that.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think where Job enters in, it has that conversation and is like, well, okay, let's talk about Job. So Job, he like followed the law. He was a good guy. Because of that, like he, in his wisdom, he amassed like a great amount of wealth, and that came from like following the laws and stuff. But then God allows something bad to happen to him, and it appears in the book of Job to be not a test from God, but a test from the opponent, the accuser, or how we would call it, Satan. But God does allow the test to happen. And in the end, the result of the test is that Job has to grapple and wrestle with God's sovereignty, and has to ask those questions. And yeah, and basically at the end, God's like, look, are you an all-wise, all-knowing God to know what's best for you and what's not best for you? Sorry. And that's kind of the end.
And if I were to literally apply that to, like, let's say the situation that's going on right now, I would think to myself, like, either God on purpose created the coronavirus, or Satan was like, oh, you think that they're so happy and good? Like, let's create a virus that screws them. And he's like, okay, cool, do it. You know, and at the end, he's like, deal with it. Like that, you know, once again, like, we're condensing an incredible book into, like, a pretty short summary. But like that, if I were to apply it literally, that would be what I would kind of take out of it in a in a summary, and that would make me super frustrated. that would not make me feel the warm and fuzzies at all.
Yeah, I think if you read Job in a vacuum, that's kind of what you're left with. I think that's why I don't like it. It almost seems to diminish God and his power to, like, susceptible to bargaining, which is just weird. I don't think that's the right thing to take out of Job, but I don't blame anybody for reading Job and taking that out of it. Like, what the characters you're going to focus on most in that book are going to be Job, but also God and Satan. And you focus on what they're doing, and it's basically placing bets on a man's life.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Job is one instance you can take out, but I think what we need to look at in the Bible is really everybody that suffer in the Bible, which is pretty much, again, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of model ourselves after the people that have responded the best to it. Obviously, Jesus is a great one. Suffering, asking for relief, but also acknowledging that he won't get it. Sometimes God does relieve us from suffering. Sometimes he doesn't. And there's a lot of theological debates surrounding why or why that doesn't happen. But I think it's both okay to pray for that to go away, but also to, it's also healthy to realize that sometimes God doesn't answer our prayers in the ways that we want him to.
Well, yeah. And then moving from, you know, maybe the wrong mindset when it comes to suffering in literally applying the book of Job to every single time it happens, to then I'm trying to think about, like, how Paul looks at his suffering in his letters. Like, we've gone through that. That would be taking some pretty incredible suffering and, like, thanking God for it, you know, like saying that, like, it brings him closer to Christ. So, you know, and like that, I mean, he went through, well, we don't even know how Paul died, but if it was anything like how the other apostles died, it was probably really, really brutal. And for someone to, like, be in his situation and be thankful for that, you know, impending suffering or the current suffering, I think is, once again, a Christian mindset that I would like to adopt, and I would like to look at as a more appropriate way of handling, like, something like our current situation.
Yeah, I think bringing up Jesus and all of this is really interesting, because I think one of the real question we're asking when we're saying, like, you know, did God like create this, or, you know, why is there suffering in the world? I think what we're honestly asking, like, is, does God care that we're suffering, and what's he going to do about it? And when we put Jesus into the middle of that picture, I mean, first of all, that's Jesus, who is God, experiencing the fullness of human suffering. Like, we're talking about the coronavirus being a physical, emotional, spiritual suffering. Like, Jesus went through all of those things to the extreme. He experienced extreme physical suffering. He experienced extreme emotional suffering. His best friends abandoned him and rejected him. He went through spiritual suffering on the cross in Gethsemane. We see all these moments of just extreme human suffering. So, I mean, the first thing to ask, like, I think, or to think about when we ask, like, oh, does God care about this, is like, well, he came and he experienced it firsthand to the highest degree than anyone can. So if that doesn't tell you something about if God cares or not, like, maybe start there and think about that for a little bit. And, you know, that's, it's a hard thing, but I think it's a great place to start.
Yeah. I think a good point of that too is, what that shows us, not only does God care, but he also understands suffering. Mm-hmm. Like, he deeply understands. And I think that needs to be, like, the point of our prayer a lot of the times when we're talking to God, is we need to be sharing how we feel about things. Like, I mean, if you read the Psalms, like I've been reading a lot recently, a lot of it is people, like a third of it is laments, people crying out to God in suffering and just sharing their anguish with God. And yep, it's so important to know that our God is a God that has endured all of this. It has endured pain and really understands what it's like to suffer death and loss and pain and all of these things. And, like, it's pretty clear to me that God doesn't want us to endure suffering, but that what God wants even more than our relief from suffering is a relationship with him.
Yeah, I think that's a good point too, because I think that when we ask ourselves the questions like, does God really care? I think what that might drive a lot of people to think is like, well, obviously not, which leads them to believe in like, you know, something pretty dark, or actually, I don't even believe that he even exists, because if he was good, these things wouldn't happen. If he was there, then these things wouldn't happen. And like, both of those are understandable reactions. But I think that the most Jesus following way that you can do it is be like, I'm really upset about this. I'm feeling a lot of intense feeling about the suffering that I'm going through. But I'm going to communicate that to God. Like, I'm going to put that up to him. I'm going to like let him know how I feel. Even if it might be super negative, like you can't be upset with someone who doesn't exist, you know? So yeah. I think that is a more humble, but still believing stance, than just like I've done in my past, just like throw up my hands and be like, well, that must be proof that there is no God, or that must be proof that God is, you know, a child with an ant farm.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think what it goes to show, like if we're upset with suffering, is that in our heart of hearts, we believe that there is an ultimate truth, that the life we're meant to live is one that is better than this. And the only way that we could feel that truth is if there's like a reality behind it. And so when we immediately go to God and we're like, what the heck? Why aren't things the way they're supposed to be? That's ultimately us saying like, we think that there is more to what's going on here than what we see on earth. Otherwise, we would just know that this is the way life is if there wasn't some other purpose. And so, I mean, going back to Jesus, I think that's another thing that Jesus shows is when the physical suffering is a big thing, but it isn't compared to what he came to fix, which is the spiritual suffering and ultimately the renewed physical suffering. So the story that comes to my mind is the paralytic man that's lowered through the roof. And so, you know, his friends, Jesus is talking in a house and it's so crowded. And there's this guy who's paralyzed. He like can't walk or anything. And his friends are like, love him to death. So they are going to do everything they can to get him in front of Jesus because they've heard Jesus can heal people physically. And so they tear a hole through the roof. I would love to have seen what actually happened here, because it had to be hilarious. Yeah, Jesus is like, gush, gush, like but then, so they lower him through the roof, and Jesus says first to him, your sins are forgiven. And in that moment, if you were one of those friends, you'd probably be like, bro, we just spent all this time getting him to you so that you would heal him. And then Jesus comes around, and I think Jesus's thought is like, yeah, you came expecting like a relief from the physical suffering that this guy's going through, but what I'm giving you is infinitely better. But also, guess what? I'm going to fix your body too. And I think that's like a short little picture of like the gospel in that moment, is we come to God saying, what is going on? This physical suffering is insane. Like, aren't you in control? Like, what are you going to do about it? Here I am. I'm coming to you. Like, do something about it. And he does, and he fixes it on the cross in the way that no one expected. But then we see, and then in the resurrection, which happens later, that the physical restoration is the next step. And so, yeah, I think when we think about like, what is God doing about human suffering? It's like, well, as Christians, when we're thinking about that, we can already say he's already answered the question of real human suffering, which is the eternal suffering, separation from God. And he has already done something to fix that. The physical suffering continues right now, but we have hope in the Bible that it will also come to a close. But like, I think, yeah, when we kind of get stuck on this, even as Christians, I think we're forgetting that like, there's actually a deeper suffering that we don't address most of the time, but Jesus has already answered it.
Yeah. The important things to remember are, the forgiveness of our sins. Like, what's more important, our current suffering, our sickness, our health, or that? And then I think one thing that Jesus talked about all the time was the coming of the new kingdom. Like, there is going to be a time, we believe, that there's not going to be sickness. There's not going to be death, you know, and that is not the time that we're living in. But we need to believe as though Jesus came to create that existence for us at some future time or place or whatever. You know, I don't have the answers for that, but it's not so much, what are you going to do for me now? What have you done for me lately? But it's, what have you already done? And what do we believe is actually going to happen?
Yeah. I think too, like, we're talking about what is God doing now. And I think an important thing to remember is that God works through people. And so with the advance of medicine, all of these doctors and nurses putting their lives on the line for people, like healing people, I really believe that that is God working through humanity to heal humanity. And I really believe that, like, when we find a cure to this virus, that is God using humans to heal his humanity. Like, I think all of those things can point us straight back to God, whether or not those people know it necessarily. And that's not diminishing all the work they're putting into it, but just that God uses humanity, and he's going to use us to continue to heal this earth and make it so his kingdom will be here.
Yeah. And I think, Hayden, you could talk about this a little bit. You've always said before, and I think to some extent, I believe that, like, there is evil, like, there is evil on the earth, and that that has an effect on the earth and our existence. And I think what Chris is saying is, like, hey, let's ascribe the good to who's good. And, like, yeah. do you think that there's also, like, a Christian way to say, let's ascribe some of the bad to, like, not in, like, a Job way, not right, not in, like, a you know, these two are bartering in heaven and, like, they're trying to make bets on what's going to happen. Whoa. But do you think that there is, like, you know, some piece of what's going on that we can't ascribe to, you know, the devil?
Yeah. So I think that is a really interesting thing. And one thing that, I've even heard, like, real good, solid Christians, like, grapple with, like, well, you know, why is God doing this? And I think, yeah, it makes me wonder, like, why do we assume that God is doing everything that we see in the world? And like, I get where it comes from, because, like, the idea is maybe, okay, like, maybe God's not doing this, but he's allowing it. But even then, so it's like, okay, he's allowing something that's not ultimately good, or at least that we can't view as ultimately good. He's allowing something that's not presently good to happen. So if that's not coming from him, where is it coming from? And yeah, I think that's something that the Bible talks in length about, and that is talked about right at the very beginning of the story. And we see this force of not God's will entering into the human story right there in Genesis chapter 3. And so I think, you know, we can call it Satan, we can call it evil, but ultimately the Bible believes that there is a force out there in the world working its own agenda in the earth presently. The story also goes on to show that even in the midst of every agenda that evil power has, that God has ultimately a plan to turn that evil agenda and use it for good. And that's where Romans, Paul just comes in with, like, the biggest slam dunk on this ever, and is like, hey, because of the sin that has been slowly planted in humanity and growing and getting deeper and growing bigger, that Jesus, when he came to forgive that, the forgiveness power and love was huge. Like, and, you know, it, like, we think of it in our own context, someone steals a penny from me. For me to forgive that doesn't take a lot of forgiveness power. Like, I'd be like, okay, you stole my penny. I forgive you, I guess. I give it back. I don't know. Actually, I don't care. Keep it. And then, like, okay, someone comes and they steal all my money and my house. They somehow like squander me out of it, and now I'm living in a box with nothing. For me to come and to forgive that person in that moment takes a ton of forgiveness power. Yeah. And so for what Paul is saying is like, in all of that, like God doesn't want human suffering. As we see in the very beginning, God created his world without human suffering. As far as we can tell, he created a good place for humans to live at the very least. And humans chose to allow that suffering into it. And he told them ahead of time. It wasn't like it was a big surprise. He was like, if you do this, you will die. So like, it wasn't like it was a big surprise. Humans brought that in, and now it has influence over us. But even in that, all of that sin from that, the very beginning, the first human sin, all the way leading up to Jesus and on to us, Jesus had his love and his sacrifice took on that power with something so overwhelming and so big that when he died with it, he actually came out the other side and new and more great creation than what he entered in with. And I think that's the fact that yes, there is another force at work in humanity, but even that force, everything it does is used to God's ultimate love and joy and power.
Kind of makes us, with how much we hate things, give Jesus that many more props.
Right.
Yeah. And I think too, I think that's really good. I think we need to, like the first humans did, we need to be careful not to be entering in and supporting that evil, entering in and supporting things that are counter God, or even to twisting God's word to harm people. I've been really frustrated, without getting political, just that people have been using the Bible to justify putting themselves in danger and putting other people in danger. And that's just, that's not what the Bible's about at all. Mm-hmm. And we need to be using the Bible to protect people and to encourage people to follow God and to follow logic and reason and point towards safety and taking care of people in love.
Yeah, it is funny. Right after Paul comes in with that slam dunk, he's like, now you may be thinking, so should I go on sinning so that Jesus's grace should abound even more? Because that's what you just said. And then Paul's like, no, don't do that. That is a silly use of logic. So yeah, totally. Paul, even after setting up that logic, is like, now you may see something here. What I'm going to tell you is, stop it.
Yeah. I think there was even people in his time that were like, ergo, I should actually sin all the more because that makes Jesus that much greater. And it's like, that's some foolishness right there.
Or people that like, during his time as well, like zealots that just completely misunderstood the Bible, but absolutely thought they were right. And so thought that that would lead them into, that it was okay to harm others in order to take over. Like, it's crazy how you can take what you think is correct and push it to the extreme and end up harming people.
Yeah. So I think the next place to kind of go with this conversation is, all right, so we see kind of some thoughts of where this whole coronavirus thing is coming from. We kind of see God's sovereignty in it. But then what do we do? What do we do right now? Like, as we're experiencing the suffering that comes along with it, okay, it's great to say that I have this hope that God's going to renew creation. He's even like, you know, going to renew and restore my life and a new humanity, his kingdom, blah, blah, blah. That's all fine. But right now it still sucks. Like, what do I do with that?
It's a good question. I think, it's like the same question I'm pretty sure the Israelites had to ask themselves a whole lot. Going through suffering. And I think if you're a Christian, continue to worship God, read his word, trust that he's going to work things together for his good, cry out to him in prayer, but also like live your life. Things have changed dramatically for everybody. Things are much worse for some than others, but everybody's had to adapt to new rhythms and new ways of life. And if you just sit and wait for everything to get better, you're going to waste a lot of time and it might not happen. So you need to probably reorient yourself, pick up new rhythms, and strive to be healthy mentally, physically, spiritually, in all of those ways with whatever your new rhythms are.
Yeah, that's really tough, because I would say, just like, this isn't even what you should do. I'm going to like run you through like what I've done and like not to do. Like you should acknowledge it. You should not pretend like it doesn't exist, because I think until something affects you, you have no frame of reference for like what it is or how it's going to turn out. So like you should acknowledge what's happening. You should respond to that acknowledgement. Like you shouldn't like compartmentalize how you're responding to it. That response might be like a super altruistic, like I'm going to save the world sort of thing. Or it might be like, I'm incredibly frustrated. And then you should have that response. Like, I think if there's one thing that I think our creator always wants from us, it's a response to him. So you should have a response. And then you should think about like, what would Jesus do in this sort of situation? Like how would he be living through this? And like, obviously I don't have the ability to like touch people and get rid of leprosy or sickness or whatever ails them. But like, what would he do in these sort of situations? And then try to live through that emulation. Like that's like, I'm a pretty practical thinker. Like, I think that's something that I've been trying to do lately. Like, I tried to ignore it because like it wasn't affecting me. And like, when it came to the point where like I couldn't ignore it, I was like, okay, I'm gonna acknowledge this. And like, it was frustrating for me in like a lot of different ways. And after I communicated and responded to that frustration, it was like, okay, now that I've gone through that process, just like you do with anything that's negative, now what am I actually going to do about it? Like, am I going to be part of the problem? Am I going to try to remove myself from everything? Or am I going to try to like do things in a different way or do things that I think would be helpful in this time?
Yeah, totally. I think even just like on a first thought basis for me, and I even just saw that Time Magazine just posted an article from N.T. Wright, and the heading of the article was Christianity doesn't provide answers for the coronavirus. It's not supposed to. And what he ends up going on saying is, you know, rational Western thinking is saying, what is causing this? Is it God and why? And what he comes along and says is like, that's not really what the Bible is trying to tell you. And what we do see in the Bible, though, is people coming alongside that suffering and lamenting it. And so I think one thing that he is encouraging is for us to voice our grief and our sadness and go to God with those things and be honest. And I think that's one thing that's hard for us, because we feel like it's heretical, but there's an entire book of the Bible dedicated to it called Lamentations. And that's what lament is to be open and honest to God about your grief and frustrations and just to pour out your heart. And so I think there's a ton of wisdom in what N.T. Wright has to say. And so maybe go look up that article if you want to. But that would be my first response to anyone now, is like, if you're hurting, if you're grieving this, if you're confused and frustrated, just like go into your room, shut the door, and be honest to God about it. I think that's a great first step.
Like, I feel like we always waste so much time in our prayers trying to strategize with God. Like, tell him how to fix things. Like, God, if you just do this, like, everything's going to be fine. When really, like, the way the Bible shows us how to pray is just to complain and, like, cry out to God. Like, be upset, be angry. Like, Jesus does it. Why are we so afraid of doing it?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And another thing that came to my mind is, like, even Jesus did this. Like, there's that moment when he rides into Jerusalem and he's kind of on the outside and he's looking into the town and he just starts crying. And it's because he's looking in at the suffering of Jerusalem, and it hurts him that the people he had set up, that he had spent 4,000 years like walking through, are still so broken and suffering. And he's like, man, the amount of times I've wanted to just gather you to myself and to put an end to this, like, but I knew that my plan was better, but oh, it hurts that you've gone through this. I think that's so profound that even Jesus grieves and laments the suffering of his people.
Yeah. Like there's gotta be some sort of reason. It, obviously Jesus and God are connected. Like he doesn't need to do it. And I think that's what we talk ourselves out of a lot. Like, God knows how I'm feeling. I don't need to tell him.
Yeah.
No, like you do need to tell him. If Jesus saw that it fit to do it, and if he saw that there was a reason to do it, we do too.
Yeah, Jesus even says that. He's like, your father knows what you need before you even ask. So tell him.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think this has been a super good conversation. Are there anything else that we want to talk about as we wrap it up?
No, I feel like I'm glad that we didn't answer anything, right? Like,
yeah.
There's no answer, but like there is a response, whether that's a positive or negative or what, I don't even put a label on it. Like, I feel like we did a good job of just responding to that, because there's a lot of complex emotions with suffering in general, and there's a lot of complex emotions with what's going on right now. So
I'd encourage anybody listening to this to find new rhythms in life. Try to adapt. Don't wait for it to blow over. You might find yourself with feeling very lonely or empty, and you can start doing things to help with that right now. And I think a large part of that is praying.
Yeah, totally. Well, cool. Yeah, I think next time we'll kind of get back onto our normal track of things, but I think it was good for us to take a second and just, like, you know, address the elephant in the room, so to speak. So glad we did it. Yep. Good work.
Awesome. Good to see you guys, as always.
Shout out to Canyon Coffee Roasters for fueling every one of our conversations. If you are only listening, you don't see it, but we are drinking a cup of Canyon every time we talk together. Thanks to John Jones Project and Clink, who are making the music that you hear in the background. Thank you for making awesome stuff that we get to share with the people that are listening to our podcast. And thank you guys for tuning in, and always feel free to let us know if you have questions or things you want to talk about, or if you want to be on the show, we'd love to have you as well. All right, thanks. We'll see you next time.